You all know why I'm here, not an orator. And I would not try to convince you of the worthiness of our cause. I'm a soldier, and we are at war.
We seem to never learn, here we go again. They rallied up the troops, God forgive the sin. Hidden agendas, can't we fight for truth? No, then there be no need to fight. Love isn't fatal, there's no fatalities. Hate supports US principalities. In this separation, we all suffer. We need to be in love with each other. This isn't training, actual invading. Depleted uranium is raining. Iraq, just know we don't have Bush's back. With a vicious attack, crossing borders with might. On foot catching flight. For hypocrisy, I will not fight. The Most High loves I, the word won't die. Even after all the times it's been revised. I've been shot by Charlton Heston, and he even autographed the weapon. The bullet was lodged in my left shin. I asked the doctor, and she kept it in.
The stress of waiting for the tension of battle, readying to make war, making peace with their God.
Baptize you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Before their baptism of fire.
You're listening to TruthLoveFreedom.org. Today is December 9th, 2006. And I'm your host, Sol Real. And I want to introduce another person that I'm going to be adding to this podcast as a co-host, or I guess that's what you call him. Whatever you want to call him. And his name is Justin. You want to have an alias?
I don't need a name. I don't know.
I decided to, it's a little weird talking to myself, and it might be a lot easier, number one, to talk to somebody else. And, you know, it's always good to have somebody else's opinion involved. Like I've said on previous podcasts, I don't, you know, I'm not just trying to push my opinion. And he's a pretty balanced individual. Skeptic, if you will. So, we're going to, basically what I'm going to do is, you know, I know I was kind of going on in this teaching that I've been doing for the last three or four podcasts, and I'm going to continue on with that teaching, but I'm going to be doing it in little small segments, because honestly, you know, it can get kind of tedious to have to research and teach, and, you know, it's not really a whole lot of fun, and I'm hoping that I can add a little spice to the podcast. So first things first, I want to apologize for taking so long to get this podcast out. It's been a while, and it's really difficult to find time in the holiday season between all the Christmas parties we have going on and family gatherings and so on and so forth. I hope you can all understand that. It's been a little while since my last one, over a month and a half. Don't lose hope. Keep hope alive, because I'm going to keep these going. I'm going to keep them coming out on a regular, consistent basis. I'm going to attempt to do it every, you know, two weeks, three tops, but I may fall off the grid once in a while, and that's another reason why I got Justin here, is because if for any reason I am unavailable to get a podcast out, I'll have him do one, and we'll switch up some flavor. You know, I want to make sure that this podcast is very informative, especially about the topics that I'm interested in, but also that, you know, we have a wide range of topics to discuss and perspectives to analyze and scrutinize. So with that, I want to introduce Justin. Say hi.
Hi. I don't talk as much.
Yeah, he's just going to be there to say, oh, Carl, you're full of it. And I mean, that may be the case. We'll see what happens. And it's a little weird. I mean, I got to admit, like, you know, being that this is a podcast and everything, I'm just now, you know, doing it alone, of course, getting used to the idea of sitting here talking to myself. Now I have somebody to talk in front of, which is even weirder than it was just talking to myself. So I'm going to have to get used to that. You know, if this was a live show, it wouldn't be so bad, because at least I feel like everyone's listening to me. I have to actually pretend there's people listening to me right now as I record this, and then I get to post it and know that people are going to hear it. But until then, it's kind of strange. So I may act a little different for the next few podcasts, just because I need to get, you know, accustomed to this. So what I decided to do is, I was in the last podcast, I talked about the origin of religion according to the mystery schools. And I recently began indoctrinating my friend here, Justin, into this idea of the mystery schools. And he is pretty skeptical, and that's great. I think that's wonderful, and we're kind of on a little voyage right now to find out how much of what they claim is true. We know that these people exist. They do believe this stuff. Now, whether or not what they say is true is a whole other factor. And though I did not delve into it to necessarily... I mean, I started out as a pathway discovery and kind of jumped off the ship. There is, you know, the possibility, and I always like to give everybody a little bit of, you know, reasonable doubt that they could be telling the truth. You know, they may actually have information that is accurate, and some of this information is pretty outrageous, whether you're hearing it from me or from them. Two different perspectives, just as outrageous. So as we go through it, I'm hoping that Justin's gonna make sure that we stay balanced and focused and have a degree of skepticism always present, and that's a good thing. So instead of continuing on from the mystery schools and going into Egypt and in the ancient world, like I said, we were going to. I lied. I'm going to change things up a little bit. And the reason why I'm going to do that is because I don't want to give you a linear history from the beginning to end. It's kind of boring. It's really stale, in my opinion. I wouldn't want to hear that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump around. We're going to go from the past to the present, and then back to the past again, and I'm going to do some adjusting here. Okay. So we're going to do some jumping around, and right now I want to get into probably what is considered to be the most, you know, interesting topic for conspiracy theorists and non-conspiracy theorists alike, because they have this enigma going on, this mystery. What are they about? What are they really about? You know, these Freemasons. And, you know, so I'm going to play something rather than give you my opinion. I'm basically going to just play something that they put out so you can hear it straight from the horse's mouth. Currently, I'm trying to get somebody to interview a Freemason, and they're not being too cooperative. None of them seem to be very interested in doing one. I have a few that are still thinking about it. So I don't know what to tell you. I hope I get one. And I hope to have other interviews, you know, Satanists and Rosicrucians and, you know, Catholic popes, or not the popes, Catholic priests. That would be nice to get the Pope. That would be really fun. So anyways, you know, I just want to get some variety going, but I definitely want to get an interview with the Freemasons. So if there's any listening who are open to discussing things, please contact me at my website, truthlovefreedom.org, and you can email me at admin@truthlovefreedom.org. So let me go ahead now and play this clip, and we're going to have a little commentary afterwards.
These men are all Freemasons, and these are Freemasons, and so are these. He is a Mason, and so is he. They come from all walks of life, from all businesses and professions. They come from a wide variety of backgrounds and places, but they have one thing in common. They have discovered a fraternity, the free and accepted Masons, and they are all brothers.
Welcome to Modern Freemasonry, as we give you a glimpse into the fraternity that has affected men's lives for centuries, and why I and thousands like me share this special brotherhood. When I first explored this great fraternity, I didn't know much about the rich histories and traditions of Masonry, but I did see the special interactions of the members of the Lodge, and saw firsthand what real brotherhood was all about. These guys considered their fellow Lodge members as a type of extended family, and I was impressed by the closeness they shared. As I learned more about my fraternity, I knew that my decision to be part of this grand society was one of the best ones that I would make for my personal and professional development. As I began to see how I fit into an organization that has affected the lives of many of our U.S. presidents, starting with George Washington, and includes some of the greatest movers and shakers of the past 300 years. I knew that I would benefit from these rich traditions, the same values and traditions that helped these men become better men and having the same effect on me today.
The The mythical beginnings of the fraternity date back to the building of the Temple of King Solomon in Jerusalem around 1000 BC. But the accepted origins of modern Freemasonry can be traced to the stonemason guilds that formed during the Middle Ages. The trade secrets of building Gothic cathedrals from massive stones without the use of mortar and with the use of geometry to turn a small drawing into an enormous structure were jealously guarded secrets. Secrets not even divulged to the priests of the churches who employed them. The guilds were developed to train masons in these skills, to enforce a standard of workmanship, and to hold their members to those high standards, as well as protect those valuable secrets. As the Gothic style of architecture lost its popularity and the common people became better educated across Europe, the Masonic guilds lost their reason for existence. But as the Age of Enlightenment dawned, a group of philosophical men saw in Masonry the ideal metaphor for character building in men. Construction of a strong, well-balanced structure, built with the assistance of many like-minded men and dedicated to God, much like the cathedrals of old. By the early 1700s, Freemasonry had changed from a guild of operative Masons who actually built buildings to a character-building society of speculative Masons, dedicated to taking good men and making them better. The Fraternity of Free and Accepted Masons has been an integral part of culture of the civilized world throughout much of recorded history, and part of American society long before the colonists took up arms against the crown in 1776. Many Americans don't realize that the development of America as a nation is interwoven with Masonic history, an illustration of Masonic traditions and values at work. These ideals of faith, combined with tolerance, charity and responsibility, and belief in the intrinsic goodness and equality of man, were carved into the foundation of our nation by men who first learned to practice them in a lodge. George Washington, Ben Franklin, John Hancock, James McHenry, and James Monroe were Masons. 9 Freemasons signed the Declaration of Independence, and 10 signed the Constitution, and 14 U.S. presidents have been Masons.
As a Mason, I've taken advantage of the many benefits of membership. And of course, I'm having a lot of fun doing it. I came to realize that my fraternity serves me in a lot of ways, some of which I didn't expect at first. The members of my lodge are not just a collection of brothers who get together in meetings and other functions. They serve as a social outlet and mentors for achieving my goals. Masonry has introduced me to business and civic leaders that I otherwise may have never known. These personal connections represent just a slice of the fraternity's benefits. My fellow lodge members are also ready and willing to help me on a personal level, as they will be for you. The fraternity's great mix of ages and backgrounds lends itself to a personal support system, an experienced group of men who help me with challenges they've faced before. And most importantly, my brothers have become lifelong friends in the fraternity experience of a lifetime.
Freemasons hold true to a set of timeless values, which makes the fraternity as impacting and relevant today as it has been for centuries. These enduring tenets have helped to guide men's lives, taking good men and helping them become better men by holding true to brotherly love, relief, and truth. These Masonic values are not just empty words on paper. No, to Masons, they represent a daily guide for living. These values we hold up to help us to gain a deeper appreciation of becoming better family men, better professionals, and better citizens. The Masonic fraternity also develops leadership abilities among its members. Masons can utilize and hone their abilities by serving as lodge officers, mentors, and committee leaders. But Masonry also provides many other opportunities for further involvement, all of it fun and all rewarding. But what do Masons do? Masons meet in a lodge. Its members are taught its precepts by a series of ritual dramas which follow ancient forms and use stonemasons' customs and tools as allegorical guides. These are called degrees, and you've probably heard of them before. In a Masonic lodge, a man must complete 3 degrees to become a full member. Like the old medieval guilds, he is initiated as an inner apprentice, passed to the degree of fellowcraft, and finally raised to the degree of a master mason. When you join a lodge, you'll make friends that will last a lifetime, from all walks of life and every economic and social and religious background. More than that, you will quickly find as you travel the country and the world that Freemasons are everywhere, and they share a bond with you solely because of the experience you share in common. Once a man becomes a Master Mason in his home lodge, he can enjoy further brotherhood and involvement in other Masonic organizations known as appendant bodies, including the Scottish Rite, the York Rite, and the Shrine. Because Masons are an eclectic mix of men from all walks of life, the other groups have developed over the years to enlarge upon the lodge experience. They offer deeper understanding of involved leadership as well as charitable and philanthropic activity.
History, symbolism, charity, personal growth and development, friendships that last a lifetime. It's all part of this incredible worldwide fraternity. To become a Freemason, simply ask for a petition from the person who gave you this DVD. He'll assist you in filling it out and tell you when it will be considered by the lodge. He'll also ask for an initiation fee, and you'll need to give that to him when you complete your petition for membership. I can personally tell you the impact the Masonic fraternity has had on my life, even in the short time that I've been part of it, from forming a support network of caring friends, getting real-life leadership experience, and meeting men from all over who enjoy helping me succeed. And not just any men, men I call my brothers.
Okay, we're back. And a little apologies if you hear a difference in the way the mic sounds. We did a little alteration here so we can both talk into the same mic. When, you know, life allows me the privilege of putting some money forth into this podcast, I promise to go ahead and get two regular decent mics so that you won't have to listen to it in this low of quality again.
It's not that low. It's pretty good.
We'll see what happens.
It's together.
If it's all good, let me know so I can save the money. So that was the Freemason video. I thought it was rather interesting when I watched it the first time because they say a number of key things in there that it's kind of interesting. If you don't know anything about Freemasonry, you wouldn't really gather anything from it. But I happen to know quite a bit about it, so I'm able to put the draw the lines from point to point and get a clearer picture. But before I start going on my little, rant about Freemasonry, anything you wanted to say about it?
Well, just where I'm coming from, I don't really have a strong opinion about Freemasonry in general and the stuff that maybe Carl talked about in previous podcasts that regarding Freemasonry. And so I'm coming at it having heard, probably like anyone else, heard, whispers of conspiracy theories here and there regarding them, but really my judgment's pretty reserved. I don't know what I think about it. So I just want to let you know that's where I'm coming from on this. Besides that, it was a really kind of old, cheesy 80s looking video, but I think this, I feel like it's unfair to judge that video based on that because it'd be like judging me based on a picture from like seventh grade. But besides that, I just want to let you know that's where I'm coming from, is that I don't know what I think. I'm definitely not as gung-ho about it as Carl, which is partly why I think he asked me to do this.
Yep, that's exactly why. We got to get some balance in here. Yep. This isn't Fox News, so. Anyway, so a few key things that I want to throw in there that he talked about is he said it started with the building of Solomon's Temple in 1000 BC.
But it said the mythic beginning. Mythical beginnings. So they didn't claim it as a fact.
Well, they never do.
Oh, okay.
They never claim it as a fact. Typically what they do is they claim it as, there is evidence to see. See, the real dilemma comes in with Freemasonry and its beginnings because nobody really knows where Freemasonry came from. All the symbols that are used obviously have religious significance. The ritual and everything dates back to the earliest records of Freemasonry, at least the first three degrees do. But where it comes from, I mean, there's no record of it. Nobody seems to know, so there's a lot of speculation about where it comes from. Certain people have speculated that it starts with the building of Solomon's Temple, reason being the central theme of the three degrees of the ritual, climbing to a master mason, has to deal with a character they call Hiram Abiff. Hiram Abiff was supposedly the person who was contracted to build Solomon's temple. Well, biblically, that's not true. There's a lot of things that's not true about the three degrees. One thing is that he is ritually, or he's murdered by what they call the ruffians, the people who are trying to get the secret of the master mason. And you're actually, when you go through the ritual, you're playing the person of Hiram Abiff.
How high up in the degrees do you start learning about that?
Well, this isn't the Blue Lodge. It's the first three degrees of Freemasonry. Okay. That's, I mean, you're not even considered a real Mason until you get to the third degree.
So you're not a real Mason until you know all about this.
Exactly. Basically. Until you undergo the ritual and climb the three degrees. And then at that point, you're a master Mason, and you're just like, as far as they're concerned, a Mason like all other Masons, that there isn't really, they would say that there's no higher degrees. There's only side degrees. So side degrees.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll get into that later. But, so the character Hiram Abiff is actually murdered by the ruffians and is raised from the dead by what they call the grip of the lion's paw, the grip of the master mason. And he's raised from the dead, and that's the ritualistic rebirth of this individual, this Hiram Abiff, who was raised from the dead, and so on. But there is no, you know, anything about this in the Bible. I mean, almost the whole thing, aside from the name Hiram, is totally mythological.
Does the name Hiram appear in any of the stories about the temple being built?
Or it does.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Yeah, well, I think
I should be familiar with this, but I'm not.
Oh, well, I think as far as I remember, and I'm going to get back into this all again. Like I studied Freemasonry quite a few years ago, and I'm just getting back into it again. So I may be a little off. If I am, feel free to correct me, people. Go to the forum, say, hey, you're wrong. I'll admit it right here on the podcast. No problem. But the story was supposedly based upon the building of Solomon's temple, which in the Bible refers to a king of Tyre who was contracted by Solomon to come and build the temple, which is, I guess, where they're getting this from. So,
right.
Allegedly, this Hiram Abiff was the son of a son of a widow. So they always talk about him as the son of the widow. So they, in one of their ways of identifying each other, they, you know, bring reference to Hiram, and we'll get into all that later. And actually, with the coming podcast, I'm going to go through all the degrees. Well, not all of them, because there's a lot of like stuff that doesn't really matter. I'm going to go through the main part of the ritual of the three degrees, because literally that would be hours and hours and hours of ritual, and I don't even want to go through all that. I just want to get to the main stuff, the stuff that really holds symbolism. But so they talked about the mythological beginnings of the building of Solomon's temple about 1000 BC, and mainly because of the ritual, I guess they've drawn some conclusion that perhaps this is where it comes from, the story of, you know, the building of Solomon's temple. However, other Masons, not all of them, but some certain Masons, and very prominent ones at that, have traced Freemasonry back to the mystery schools, which I was referring to in an earlier podcast. And we'll get into who those Masons are and why they believe that, and hopefully find out whether they're telling the truth or not. But through research, and my friend, his skepticism here.
That's, yeah, that's not your name. Sorry, delete that part. When you call me a skeptic, just so everyone knows, I'm not a skeptic like in the sense that you would usually find online. I'm not that kind of skeptic. I'm a skeptic in comparison to you.
Yeah.
not in comparison. Like I believe that there's a God, for instance. Like, so I'm not super skeptical. I'm just a little skeptical about this stuff. And what I want to know, and I always tell, you know, I'm always saying, okay, what do I call you? Sorry.
I don't know. What do you call me?
I mean, what can I call you if I'm referring to you?
You can call me Carl. I'm not trying to keep a secret.
Okay.
I use Surreal because it's like, you know, yo.
Gotcha. Know? So I can call you Carl.
That's fine.
Okay, cool. Sorry. Anyway, whenever I'm talking to Carl about this... Oh, pause here. Okay. Whenever I'm talking to Carl about this, the one thing that's most interesting to me is where do these ideas of how mystery religions were, where do they even come from? Are there documents before the time of Christ, before the first couple hundred years, you know, AD or CE or whatever you want to call it, are there documents or anything substantiating that this is a tradition that's as old as it claims to be?
And that's a totally worthy thing. So when I read into it, basically, like I had stated in my earlier podcast, I got into New Age, so... Of course, when you're getting into a religion, most people would be really skeptical. I wasn't. Religion kind of fit all the desires of my heart, so to speak, and I totally went into it hook, line, and sinker to find out this was true. And then eventually I started believing in the Bible because it just happened to be fulfilling prophecy of Revelation. Now, whether or not, you know, any of what they claimed about the history of the religions tracing it back were 100% true or not, I definitely think there are shreds of truth. I definitely noticed a lot of correlation in the myths that I heard. And definitely, I guess more or less, and this is what the difference I think between me and Justin. I personally believe if enough people who are holding positions of prestige and respect among scholars and among great thinkers, not great thinkers, I'm not talking like, you know, higher ups, but enough people that I would give respect to believe this stuff, I typically just, you know, grant them the fact that they may be telling the truth.
And the way we differ is that I would admit that if enough people believe it, it doesn't matter if it's historically true or not. It really doesn't. I mean, if you're talking about why do people think a certain way, I just wish, you know, it could be presented as just a philosophy or set of beliefs instead of something grounded in history.
Right. And so, well, now, of course, we're getting off the topic about Freemasonry.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Freemasonry, most Masons at least, would basically agree with Justin and say, well, there is no truth to what I'm saying. Only certain Masons would say that. And we're going to talk about them. And we're going to kind of discover and see whether or not it's true. I know that among conspiracy theorists that typically they believe that this religion, this group of people, have existed for a long time, since the beginning of the planet, and that they are trying to, you know, basically continue their power, their grasp on the world all the way up until today. So are they correct? Am I wrong? Is, you know, who's right, who's wrong on this whole thing? Who knows? All I know is that I read their books, and this is what the books taught me. Now, whether or not that is accurate or not, and I have my own opinion about it, you know, I'm not going to get into opinions too much. I just want to get into the history and see if it is true and whatnot. But as far as referring to certain, they said that the Freemasonry started out as an actual stonemason guild. Now, everybody knows what stonemasonry is. I mean, anybody who lays stone or lays brick is a mason. Okay, but they found these as allegorical tools to convey a message, and that at one point they were actually what they called operative masons, which means they actually worked with stone. This is the actual, as far as they know, factual history. Although they honestly, there's not too much evidence about it. There's very, you know, brief, you know, I don't know, small amounts of evidence showing that could even be true. No one really knows where Freemasonry came from. It's probably the more likely assumption, if you will, compared to all the other ones in the mystery schools and Solomon's Temple and all. But they said that it went from operative masonry to speculative masonry, and that a certain group of philosophical men saw the tools of a stonemason as the perfect allegorical way of conveying something, or teaching men whatever they claim to be teaching. Now, they never ever allude to who these philosophical men were.
No, I noticed that.
Okay, well, and that's just what's really interesting, because typically most Masons would say, well, there is no, you know, higher-ups, there is no philosophical men, it just kind of evolved, and it's just a fraternity, calm down, you know, all this stuff. But yet, when you see things that come out of their own publications like this, and they allude to what I'm going to be getting into, this group of philosophical men that allegedly started it, many of the most prominent Freemasons have said who they are, and typically they trace it back to the mystery schools. Now, I want to talk for a second about the fact that Masonry never refers to it as a religion. Okay, well, there's one thing that it would always call Freemasonry, and it's typically what they call it today, and that is lodge. Well, yeah, they are lodges according to what they say, but if you look on many Masonic lodges, it doesn't say lodge, it says temple. There's a big difference between a lodge and a temple. I think we can all agree on that. But yet, you know, they didn't have any reservation about putting temple up there until recently in history, as people started regarding them as actual religion and coming up with a lot of beliefs about them. So I just bringing that to your attention, you'll notice it kind of jumps back and forth depending on who you're talking to. And more often than not, you'll hear the word lodge. But if you go and look on the front of their building, it says temple. Look them up in the phone book, and you will see Masonic temple, usually. So
yeah, add a side point. I went to a Presbyterian church recently, just kind of visited it one time, and This is a chicken egg kind of thing. I don't know what came first, but the setup was like nearly exactly like I've seen in pictures of different kind of like Masonic halls or whatever you want to call it. It was kind of odd the way it was. It kind of freaked me out a little bit.
That's interesting. I got it. Where was this at?
This in town.
Really?
Presbyterian church in town.
I gotta go check that out. Also, he talked about the benefits of being a Mason, the social benefit. He has mentors. But there's two other things that he mentioned, which was his contacts and support. He got contacts. Well, what would you need contacts for? For what? Well, in case you didn't know, for the last so many hundreds of years, Freemasonry has kind of been the place to go for businessmen in order to advance your business. And it's a great way to make contacts because typically they will choose a Mason if they're going to contract out for whatever reason. Say you're in construction, somebody needs a building built. Guess who they're going to come to? You. Typically, if you're a new Mason and you're climbing the levels, they like to show their appreciation by contracting to you. And so this is definitely, it was a major lure in previous history, not so much today, because most Masons today are very old and they're trying to recruit really intensely right now. Actually, the one here in town, they have a banner up asking for people to join because the last probably six members are about 80 years old. And without members, I guess the lodge is going to get shut down. So, but they are on the rise. I'm starting to see it more and more. More people are thinking about joining. And actually, I'm one of them. I was thinking about joining. What the hell? That sounds a little ridiculous, but you know, why not? If it's everything they claim it to be, you know, I don't know. I have to think about it. It's kind of sarcastic in a sense, but I think it might be interesting. Oftentimes when I talk to Freemasons, they always say you can't really understand Masonry until you experience it. And so I'm like, okay, I'll go experience it.
Yeah.
Why not? No.
But then you can never believe what you say about it because you've already told us that they claim to never actually tell the truth about themselves. So
exactly. I guess the truth of the matter is whether or not I can climb to the higher degrees. You know,
we'll never know. We'll never know.
Yeah, I'll get blackballed, I'm sure. Okay. So they also, it's either their catchphrase that they typically use, and you'll hear over and over again, is they make good men better men. Well, I mean, no disrespect to Freemasonry, but I can't help but like smirk, you know, at that, because it's like, what, you know, like, how can Freemasonry make you a better man? If you're an ass, you're an ass. Okay. I mean, honestly, I mean, it's like joining 4-H and expecting to become a better man, or, you know, any other of the Elks Lodge or whatever. I mean, and there's been plenty of Freemasons that had, you know, less than good reputation. So,
yeah. Yeah, but they mentioned in the little ad or whatever that they believe in an intrinsic goodness of man. So taking any good man and making that good man better, it sounds like they're just saying you start at a place of good. That's like taking anyone and making them better. I don't know. I don't know if I buy the intrinsic goodness to begin with, but I wonder. I don't know. Sorry.
No, that's very good. All right, so it says, and what do they do? And this is probably the most interesting part of that whole clip. What do they do? They meet at a lodge or temple. Of course, they didn't throw that in there. They teach precepts through ritual dramas. Okay, hold on. Ritual dramas? Like, I guess they had to throw drama in there because it would be a little weird to say, yeah, we teach precepts through rituals.
Yeah, which is basically what they were saying.
Yeah, which is really interesting.
They even showed, if you see, there's a video of it, they show a clip of it, and it's a guy, he's like wearing a wig, he's doing a ritual that looks, it's weird. He looks like George Washington, kind of.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, so you got, you know, they meet at a lodge. Precepts through ritual dramas that take ancient forms.
Right.
Whoa, hold on. Wait a second. Ancient forms?
Even now, okay, yeah.
You know, you're talking about the ancient world, and you're talking about not just one form, but many. Well, if you look into Freemasonry, the only things they could possibly be alluding to are the mystery schools of the ancient world. I mean, that's what I think, unless they you're talking about just the one. And I can't even see how they can manage to get a ritual based on the building of Solomon's Temple. They do, kind of, but, just noteworthy. They use Mason's tools as well. They already said that. Yeah, they found Mason's tools to be great ways of, you know, teaching this art form. And there's a lot of reasons why I'm going to get into later on that Mason tools really make such a great allegorical, you know, are so usable for allegorical lessons and precepts because of where they come from themselves have a lot to do with why they're good. And oftentimes you'll hear them talk about the experience. It was the experience of masonry. Well, what kind of experience are you talking about? If you're talking about meeting at a lodge, well, I don't claim to be the funnest guy on the planet, but, you know, meeting at a lodge with a bunch of old guys doesn't really, you know, wearing funny outfits doesn't necessarily, to me, create any kind of experience that I would feel like would benefit my life in any great way. I think the only thing that they could possibly be talking about are two things, actually. One is their charitable works, which I guess they could be talking about. And two, the ritual. And typically when I talk to Freemasons, they talk very fondly about their ritual that they go through in order to become a member. It's quite an experience. And when we go through what the ritual is, you'll understand why.
Yeah, and ultimately, whether it's a religion or not, it seems like what they're talking about here are the same aspects of a religion that appeal to people. I mean, whether they want to call themselves a religion or not, they're appealing to that same instinct.
Mm-hmm. And then he alludes to a deeper understanding. Well, what kind of deeper understanding can you get by being a Mason? A deeper understanding. And they always, always, always talk about the moral lessons that they're getting taught. Well, deeper understanding, I think he's alluding to something else, personally.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how I see it. And that's obviously coming from a biased person, somebody who studied it. But I'm trying to be open-minded, and, you know, and we're going to go through it and talk about what they are teaching. So I thought that was really interesting. If you want to, just go onto YouTube and type in Freemasonry. You'll find the video on there, and you can actually watch it. I might actually post it on the forum, but right now I'm going through a lot of changes on the website, trying to get a new style up. So it's a little bit more organized. It's kind of, you know, sterile right now. There's not a whole lot there, but me posting stuff. So, yeah. Okay. This is where we pause and gather our thoughts. So, you know, I really don't want to just tell you everything that I believe. Obviously, I'm going to do that because it's my radio show and I'm going to be talking a lot
on it. Do what you want to do.
Yeah. But, you know, I really would like to get a Freemason on here to basically lay out what he believes. Now, like, no, and this is typically what I get when I talk to Freemasons, is that no one Mason could ever, you know, encapsulate Freemasonry. I mean, it's different to everybody. And that's funny because, like, yeah, I mean, that's true. It's true with everything, though. You know, like, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. I mean, even Lucky Charms, I mean, it's going to taste different to everybody. If some people hate it and some like it. It's just... So anyways, yeah, it's a great point, but there's obviously some comparisons in their beliefs. And typically when I talk to Freemasons, they have a general flow, I guess you could say, of belief systems. There's something that about them that is different than most other people that seems to be consistent with almost every Freemason I've talked to. And I've been talking to Freemasons, especially on the internet, for probably years now, and I've probably talked to over 100 at this point.
Does it come off like they know something you don't know, or does it come off like does it come off at all just like a, I don't know, lack of a better term, like a certain piece or knowledge of something that gives them a different understanding of everything else, or what do you think it is?
I guess when I said it, they're always like that. Like they always act like they know something I don't know. I guess that's not necessarily true. Let me correct that because I don't want to offend any Masons. Let me make that very specific. Typically, if you allude to anything greater than what they had, you know, already conveyed Freemasonry as being the whole moralistic, you know, lodge meeting group of really, you know, good guys who do charity work. Anything beyond that is like not okay to. If you try to go there, they basically make you sound like you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
That's what they try to do. And that's a little different than I think than, you know, acting like, you know, they know everything or something that you don't know. But when it comes to what they believe, it's always tends to be kind of mystical. You know, I've met a few and very few
very religious, like, you know, like Christians, for example, who think that everybody else is wrong. All, you know, not, no, they wouldn't say that. Not that everybody else is wrong, but that they are Christian and not, they don't accept, they're not very accepting.
I think if you push it, that I think if you push them, that's what they'd have to say.
Yeah, they wouldn't say that as Masons, though. It's a very, that's very un-Mason-like. Okay, sorry. Very, Masons would not say that. Masons would say they respect everybody else, everybody's religious freedom.
Got it. Okay.
You see what I'm saying? Anybody who doesn't is considered to be, you know, not really in line with the moral teachings of Freemasonry. But they do talk about a universal brotherhood. You know, they talk about, you know, everybody being inherently good type of thing. So, I mean, that's definitely contrary to some teachings.
Right.
Religiously. And, but the thing that I, when I get into study, talking theology with them, and not like for Freemasonry, I don't say, okay, what does Freemasonry believe? Because anytime you do that, they laugh at you. Freemasonry doesn't believe anything. We're just a group of guys who get together in a lodge.
Yeah.
Everybody's welcome to believe whatever they want. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, that it's as ridiculous as saying that, you know, everybody who eats apples and likes them believes the same thing about God. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the kind of attitude they have about it. But if you get into their theology, typically it's always the same, at least what I get from them. And it's, you know, all religions are kind of the same, that there is no specific religion for the world. It's all kind of like everyone's interpretation of the same God.
Right.
You know, and they have these kind of weird mystical things. And of course, everybody's a little different. Some of them are more extreme than others. Of course, like, they all have the right to believe whatever they want. You don't, it's not a requirement to believe any of this stuff to climb the levels of Freemasonry. But as far as what I can tell, when I climb, or when I did the research of the different levels, it does seem to teach you that all religions are the same religion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can choose whether or not you want to get that lesson or not. You can climb the levels without actually learning that lesson. So, at least that's what I perceived it to be, in my opinion. So, you know, they're when I talk to people who are Freemasons, they always seem to have a lot of beliefs that are in common that are outside of their religion, but always in common within Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's a coincidence or not, I guess they would say that's just a coincidence, or maybe I just happen to talk to those type of people or whatever. I don't know. I tend to think that it is Freemasonry that's causing them to believe this stuff. Or not causing them, but maybe they all became Masons because they all believed it. Either way, there is some kind of theology that's at work there, no matter how you choose to look at it.
Yeah, what do you mean by theology? I mean, to me, it just sounds like, maybe this is a dumb distinction, it just sounds more like a philosophy than a theology, and maybe there's not much of a difference, but it kind of just sounds like there's a general belief that they have about the world on a secular level, and when you get into the spiritual level, it's almost like they're saying, yeah, that's an allegory for just this physical level, really. I don't know what I'm talking about, but...
Well, here's an example. Every lodge has the Master Mason sitting in the east. Now, as we all know, the sun rises in the east.
It does.
And when you are coming into the lodge, you're on the other side of the door asking for the light of the lodge in the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the Master Mason is the one who chooses whether or not you're going to see this light, the mm-hmm. light of Masonry. Well, and usually when the Master Mason's sitting there, on either side of the Master Mason is a symbol, or is a picture of a sun and a moon. Okay, so that can be interpreted a lot of ways, but typically, like, you know, that has significant religious I should say religious significance to many religions of the ancient world, especially in the mystery schools. They believed in the sun god and all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And basic, but along with that, you have the sun and the moon, which is symbolic of this idea of duality, the light and the darkness, working together in one, balancing each other, kind of like the yin and yang. And so, yeah, you can look at that and say the sun, the moon, the light of the lodge, and the light teaches moralistic lessons on a secular level. But there, it crosses over the threshold into a little bit of the religious. So, of course, depending on the person, you can look at it either way. You want to? I mean, you can look at it, you can think Masonry is anything you want. It's up to you. But if what they're saying is true historically, ritualistically, and as we go through the ritual and talk about and read some of the stuff from Freemasons and stuff, you will find that the theology kind of crosses or the philosophy crosses over into theology very quickly. And coincidentally, I don't know if that was as much of a coincidence, but there's this thing called theosophy, which is the belief that you can gain philosophical concepts from theological entities, and that's actually what they were there for, to teach. They're not real entities. They're philosophical lessons being taught in a manner that is considered esoteric. And that's most of what I'm going to be talking about as far as these teachings are concerned. So
there's like a... It would explain why, to me, there's like a... It's mushy as far as, are we talking about religion or are we just talking about a way to live, a philosophy or whatever? Like, even when you talk about sun and moon and light, it's like, I think of like the Renaissance. I think of like the importance of wisdom personified by light or knowledge personified by light or whatever. But so like my mind automatically goes more to a secular place. It's like maybe just because of my background.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And a lot of Masons would see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's also other people and other Masons and just, you know, and historically there are people who would look at it in a religious way, but it almost means the same thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it does.
Like, for example, like just to show that, you know, what you're saying is not completely false. Albert Mackey has a encyclopedia on Freemasonry. I have it. It's in two editions, and it's not the original, but they've reprinted it over and over again with some revisions. And on the front of it, it says, light is knowledge.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the light of the lodge is knowledge. But knowledge of what? I mean, knowledge can be philosophical, it can be theological, it can be a lot of things. So, you know, it just really depends on how you take it. And coincidentally, most of everything that Freemasonry talks about is religious. They use these symbols that they're using, the pentagram, you know, the different the square and compass and the shape that it's in, these are all religious symbols.
Yeah, and I mean, I've always thought that was kind of it'd be odd to consider yourself not a religion and borrow all these things. I understand that it can be done, and it's in some way it's, you know, maybe it's just convenient to use these symbols, but I always thought it was a little fishy. Yeah. To be honest.
Well, let's take it from an authority. I'm going to read something now that comes from Albert Mackey's Encyclopedia on Freemasonry about Freemasonry as religion. And you can judge for yourself. I mean, this is a highly esteemed Freemason, considered one of the authorities on the subject of Masonry. Of course, he is entitled to his opinion, like all Masons would say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. But you can, you know, you can take it for what you think of it. It's up to you. And I'll read that in a second. Okay, so Justin's going to go ahead and read this, and reason being, I, as you can tell from previous podcasts, I suck.
Not true. Come on.
I do the best I can.
All right, all right.
So here you go.
So this is under
It's forewarning you, it's going to be pretty
long. It's long.
But the reason I'm going to go ahead and have him read it all, number one, is because I'm not doing it and I can.
Yeah, right.
Sure. It makes it a lot easier on me. No, but also it's because I don't want any Freemason going, you know, oh, he only read part of it, he didn't read the whole thing, and you missed some valuable stuff. So, I mean, if there's any valuable stuff there, you're going to hear it.
All right. This is under the heading Religion of Masonry. It says, there has been a needless expenditure of ingenuity and talent by a large number of Masonic orators and essayists in the endeavor to prove that Masonry is not a religion. This has undoubtedly arisen from a well-intended but erroneous view that has been taken of the connection between religion and Masonry, and from a fear that if the complete disseverance of the two was not made manifest, the opponents of Masonry would be enabled successfully to establish a theory which they have been fond of advancing, that the Masons were disposed to substitute the teachings of their order for the truths of Christianity. Now, I have never for a moment believed that any such unwarrantable assumption as that Masonry is intended to be a substitute for Christianity could ever obtain admission into any well-regulated mind. And therefore, I am not disposed to yield on the subject of the religious character of Masonry quite so much as has been yielded by more timid brethren. On the contrary, I contend without any sort of hesitation that Masonry is, in every sense of the word, except one, and that its least philosophical, an eminently religious institution, that it is indebted solely to the religious element which it contains for its origin and for its continued existence, and that without this religious element it would scarcely be worthy of cultivation by the wise and good. But that I may be truly understood, it will be well first to agree upon the true definition of religion, There is nothing more illogical than to reason upon undefined terms. Webster has given four distinct definitions of religion. One, religion is a comprehensive sense, includes, he says, a belief in the being and perfections of God, in the revelation of his will to man, in man's obligation to obey his commands, in a state of reward and punishment, and in man's accountableness to God, and also true godliness or piety of life, with the practice of all moral duties. Two, his second definition is that religion, as distinct from theology, is godliness or real piety in practice, consisting in the performance of all known duties to God and our fellow men, in obedience to divine command, or from love to God and his law. Three, again, he says that religion, as distinct from virtue or morality, consists in the performance of the duties we owe directly to God from a principle of obedience to his will. Four, and lastly, he defines religion to be any system of faith or worship. And in this sense, he says, religion comprehends the belief and worship of pagans and Mohammedans as well as of Christians. Any religion consisting in the belief of a superior power or powers governing the world and in the worship of such power or powers. And it is in this sense that we speak of the Turkish religion or the Jewish religion as well as of the Christian. Now, it is plain that in either of the first three senses in which we may take the word religion, and they do not very materially differ from each other, Masonry may rightfully claim to be called a religious institution. Closely and accurately examined, it will be found to answer to any one of the requirements of either of these three definitions. So much does it include a belief in the being and perfections of God that the public profession of such a faith is essentially necessary to gain admission into the order. No disbeliever in the existence of God can be made a Mason. The revelation of his will to man is technically called the spiritual, moral, and Masonic trestle board of every Mason, according to the rules and designs of which he is to erect the spiritual edifice of his eternal life. A state of reward and punishment is necessarily included in the very idea of an obligation which, without the belief in such a state, could be of no binding force or efficacy. And true godliness or piety of life is inculcated as the invariable duty of every Mason from the inception of the first to the end of the very last degree that he takes. So again, in reference to the second and third definitions, all this practical piety and performance of the duties we owe to God and to our fellow men arise from and are founded on a principle of obedience to the divine will. Else, whence or from what other will could they have arisen? It is the voice of the GAOTU symbolized to us in every ceremony of our ritual and from every portion of the furniture of our lodge that speaks to the true Mason, commanding him to fear God and to love the brethren. It is idle to say that the Mason does good simply in obedience to the statutes of the order. These very statutes owe their sanction to the Masonic idea of the nature and perfections of God, which idea has come down to us from the earliest history of the institution, and the promulgation of which idea has the very object and design of its origin. But it must be confessed that the fourth definition does not appear to be strictly applicable to Masonry. It has no pretension to assume a place among the religions of the world as a sectarian system of faith and worship, in the sense in which we distinguish Christianity from Judaism or Judaism from Mohammedism. In this meaning of the word, we do not and cannot speak of the Masonic religion, nor say of a man that he is not a Christian, but a Mason. Here it is that the opponents of Freemasonry have assumed mistaken ground in confounding the idea of a religious institution with that of the Christian religion as a particular form of worship, and in supposing, because Masonry teaches religious truth, that it is offered as a substitute for Christian truth and Christian obligation. Its warmest and most enlightened friends have never advanced nor supported such a claim. Freemasonry is not Christianity, nor a substitute for it. It is not intended to supersede it, nor any other form of worship or system of faith. It does not meddle with sectarian creeds or doctrines, but teaches fundamental religious truth, not enough to do away with the necessity of the Christian scheme of salvation, but more than enough to demonstrate that it is, in every philosophical sense of the word, a religious institution, and one, too, in which the true Christian Mason will find, if he earnestly seeks for them, abundant types and shadows of his own exalted and divinely inspired faith. The tendency of all true Masonry is toward religion. If it makes any progress, its progress is doing to that there. Holy end. If it makes
this,
any,
this is a lot, so.
We're almost there. If it makes any progress, its progress is to that holy end. Look at its ancient landmarks, its sublime ceremonies, its profound symbols and allegories, all inculcating religious doctrine, commanding religious observance, and teaching religious truth. And who can deny that it is eminently a religious institution? But besides, Masonry is, in all its forms, thoroughly tinctured with a true devotional spirit. We open and close our lodges with prayer. We invoke the blessing of the Most High upon all our labors. We demand of our neophytes a profession of trusting belief in the existence and the superintending care of God, and we teach them to bow with humility and reverence to his awful name, while his holy law is widely opened upon our altars. Freemasonry is thus identified with religion, and although a man may be eminently religious without being a Mason, it is impossible that a Mason can be true and trusty to his order unless he is a repeater of religion and an observer of religious principle. Let me take that sentence over again. Freemasonry is thus identified with religion, and although a man may be eminently religious without being a Mason, it is impossible that a Mason can be true and trusty to his order unless he is a respecter of religion and an observer of religious principle. But the religion of Masonry is not sectarian. It admits men of every creed within its hospitable bosom, rejecting none and approving none for his peculiar faith. It is not Judaism, though there is nothing in it to offend a Jew. It is not Christianity, but there is nothing in it repugnant to the faith of a Christian. Its religion is that general one of nature and primitive revelation handed down to us from some ancient and patriarchal priesthood in which all men may agree and in which no men can differ. It inculcates the practice of virtue, but it supplies no scheme of redemption for sin. It points its disciples to the path of righteousness, but it does not claim to be the way, the truth, and the life. In so far, therefore, it cannot become a substitute for Christianity, but its tendency is thitherward, and as the handmaid of religion, it may and often does act as the porch that introduces its votaries into the temple of divine truth. Masonry, then, is, indeed, a religious institution, and on this ground mainly, if not alone, should the religious Mason defend it.
Well,
that was long.
That was long, but I wanted to make sure we did it in its entirety.
Yeah, very interesting.
I'm not a propagandist, folks. Just trying to tell you something that I learned, and hopefully you'll see it the same way I do, and if not, hey, let's talk about it, you know? So what did you think about that?
That was interesting. It seemed like, when was that written?
Do you know? Let me see here. 1921.
Oh, volume 2. Okay, published in 1921.
Yeah, this is the second volume.
Got it.
The real title is An Encyclopedia of Freemasonry and Its Kindred Sciences, Comprising the Whole Range of Art, Science, and Literature as Connected with the Institution, by Albert G. Mackey. 33rd degree. This is the new and revised edition. So anyways, so what'd you think about it? It's very interesting, huh?
Yeah.
I think that most people would find it interesting. And usually when I quote this book, when he starts saying it is a religious institution, Freemasons, it's like going, well, yeah, you didn't understand what he was saying, though. Like, you know?
Do you clarify?
Yeah, I think, well, yeah, not really. But I think that, you know, when it comes to philosophy and religion, they're not too far apart, you know? Philosophy is oftentimes born of religion, so,
mm-hmm.
And comes from people who did, if have religious convictions and obviously influence their philosophy. So I don't think it's a stretch to go from, you know, philosophy to religion.
Right.
Yeah, I noticed that in that he talked about the G-A-O-T-U.
Yeah.
In case you're not sure what that is, they call it the Gatu. The Gatu is the grand architect of the universe. This is the name they give God in its abstract sense. When they refer to God, Most High God, and they're talking about the grand architect of the universe. Well, Freemasonry, of course, is dealing in masonry. So naturally, it would make God a name that would have to do with masonry, which is an architect.
A mason himself.
Yeah. An architect. Well, something like a mason, kind of. Not the lay kind, the one that actually stacked bricks.
Right.
The one who designs it. So the grand architect of the universe is God, and they go through a lot of the different names of God and so on. And so just a little understanding about a few things that he was mentioning in that. You can be any religion and be a Mason, but you have to be a religion to exist. You have to believe in some religion or some God in order to enter Freemasonry.
Is that because you have to profess like a higher being, basically?
They, or what? You know, when I ask people why you have to believe in God, yeah, and you do have to profess, yes. The answer to that is yes. You do have to profess a higher being.
Like AA? Kind of, or?
I don't know. They require you to
profess. Yeah, it's one of the steps. Yeah, one of the 12 steps.
So if you're an atheist, you're just screwed?
Well, no, it doesn't necessarily have to be God, but it's got to be something higher than yourself.
Interesting.
And I wonder, is the God they're talking about God, or is it just something higher than what you are, do you know?
No, it's God. You have to confess. Well, I mean, even in the highest degree, the 33rd degree, you have to, one of the part of the rituals, you have to kiss the Bible, the book of your faith, and they lay three on the table.
Mm-hmm.
One is the Bible, the other one is the Quran, and the other one is the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, if you're Jewish, they would, you know, only put the...
Like the Torah.
Torah. There, yeah. So, you know, whatever your faith you are, though they just put the three major religions in front of you, even though they already know. They say this is not a test, but I can imagine why you would climb all those levels to get the honorary 33rd degree and then get this test and and it not have some kind of importance to it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of it, you know, you have these things going on and, you know, and they always claim that they're, you know, they're got something going on.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about.
People don't devote their life to something they truly think is meaningless, and they don't work for years in order to perform an act that is meaningless. People don't. That's just not like people.
Right. We'll go through it more and more. I guess we'll go ahead and call this podcast done. I think this is going very well.
Yeah, it was cool.
I think that having somebody here to talk to and doing this whole thing makes me a lot more, I don't know, what would you say?
Conversational?
Sharper?
Sharper.
More on point.
More sharper.
More sharper. And, you know, and having somebody here to talk to is obviously a lot more fun for me. And actually, usually what takes me 3 or 4 days of just doing little pieces of the podcast, we just kicked out in an hour and a half.
Very nice.
Yeah. And I think it flowed smoothly.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and call it an end. Thanks for listening. Please, I beg you, hop on the forum and register. I've had more spam bots registering on my forum than people. That's really depressing for me. So if you could, just hop on there. Tell me how you want it changed, man. It's just there for you guys to chat, and it would be cool to get some people on there. Just so you know, I get typically 6 downloads a day. And I've had over 90 downloads, individual downloads from my podcast. And that's just one of them. The other ones, I get a lot of people who hit and come. A lot of them are when they listen to one, they listen to all 4. And I have like over 30 subscribers now, and I've only done 4 podcasts. So obviously there's people out here who are interested in this topic. And it would be really nice to get us on there conversating, asking questions. It would give me a lot more clarity on what direction to take this podcast for the sake of keeping you listening, because I don't want to lose you. Because we've got a long, long, long way to go. And delving into this subject matter before we bring it back to politics. And then we have a long way to go after that. So it's going to be interesting. So please hop on the forum. I have a Frapper map. Get on the Frapper map. Just let me know you're out there. And I had the Google thing working, the analytics, where I could actually see who's hopping on the website all over the world. We have people in South America, Spain, England, all over. I mean, just all over the world, all over the United States especially, checking out the podcast. And I that stokes me out. I get really happy about that. So it's really cool. It's really trippy to think that someone's listening to my podcast and, you know, the other side of the globe. So anyways, we'll go ahead and call it quits. Thank you for listening. Until next time, say bye.
Bye. Thank you.
to you. Mix what I do with Zion, I is special, and you knew it too. Time for your mind, expansion, and we on the grind. Answering the question to where the hell am I gonna find bliss? My soul's music is timeless. Keep it close to your heart, it's art at its finest. A pint is not enough, liquid courage to go around. So when I draw from this universe, I put it into the sound. Would have been lost but found myself in the process of getting up over and over and dealing with God's test. You're best to believe my quest to relieve pain, it still remains. But frame by frame we make the sickest scene. The most equipped of teams tower with tall torches. Only the weak-hearted wilt like cowards with no voices. Of course the choice is yours, pick the lock to open doors. Get the crop to go for more, because it's pure. And wherever the wind blows, me and my trusty pen go. And at the drop of a 10-cent coin, I let these men know. Get past the windows, the walls, and the fences. Let down your guards and come to your senses. Let it flow.
Sit back, relax, and vocalize my free. Dumb, cause some ton of emotion locks inside of me. I play the lottery of life, fool, I'm the ruler of roulette. Pulling a card, but it's hard not to sweat. Place your bet, you ain't a gambler? Well, stricken, I'ma handle your low. I got some tools for the small to grow. Ayo, now let it flow, I bring it lower than the cold. And my ebony soul, turn it to diamonds, cause I'm dying to know. What is the process? We dropping this. Genesis, apocalypse, the opposites. Can't have light without the darkness. I'm Spartacus, Poseidon, Shango, and Orion. I'm before yesterday and tomorrow, I'm magnifying. I'm the lost hope, the love we were scared of. The child in the big green field who wants a hug. I'm a natural, black classical. Thoughts generate pressure build. Always cut the skill with some heat and my vertigo halo. Sometimes you shouldn't say no. We clean out the stuck disease, spit the Drano. Let's go and let's flow. That's for sure, baby.
Sideways days with a slight gray haze. When the right ways, they don't pay. But they build personality and character. Originality will carry ya like a chariot in the area. While others stare and laugh, me, I'm just preparing that. Passion pinned to the point where one can only dare to act natural in my presence. Cause we're all of the earth's essence. Bring it out from the root, sing it out like some true feelings. Uninhibited from the ceiling to the floor and beyond what man's made. Cause I stand for so much more. And I plan for that though, but can't demand for that. So when I don't know, I let the wind blow.
I spend my days in the limbo where the sun is a temple. And we all walk around laughing endo. It's like a maze what I've been through, though it all seems so simple. Hindsight 2020, yet it's hard to continue in the now when the style ain't really versatile. And you get caught up looking out the window. I mean, don't be watching me when you got some place to be. Suck a nipple, blink your old brain cripple. So let it flow.
Yeah.